we are on a Sunday. This is episode 203. I hate that 203. Oh, it's not a number. 203 of Shut Up and Grind with your host, yours truly, Robert B. Foster. Now, don't get thrown off by the fact that I'm wearing sleeves. It's 7 degrees outside, okay? Damn it, it's cold. So I'm covering up today. I am not the tank top wearing phenom today, all right? So we are going to talk about creating social awareness through fictional stories. And I'm not quite sure what that means, but that's why I bring on a guest that's going to tell us all about that. So if you are brand new to the show, we're all about overcoming obstacles. We're about defying the odds and helping you clear the path to whatever is stopping you from reaching your goals. And that goal could be anything. It could be health and fitness. It could be business. It could be relationship. It could be overcoming trauma. It could be whatever it is, whatever you're working on. If something is in your way, this show is designed to bring guests on from all over the world to help you identify with their stories of how they got through whatever it is they got through to get to the successes that they're having now. And again, this is episode 203, so we have quite the Rolodex of amazing stories, and today is going to be no different. And so if you have no idea who I am or why you should even tune in for this next hour, here I am. I started doing workshops and doing groups where I'm getting up in front of others, like outside of the gym setting, and talking about resilience and perseverance and goal setting and vision and taking action. You should know what 1 hour of your time is worth. You should know the value that you bring to the marketplace. You know what your passion is. Starts with clarity of vision. If you don't have the clarity of vision, whatever next thing you get, you're not gonna see it through because you don't have the clarity of vision. So the point of my pain was being told you will never run or jump again. And all that stuff, I was like, you know what? Like, I wanna be able to take this even bigger.
If you know why you do what you do, you have to know how to charge for what you do. That's how you're going to change your life, and that's how you're going to leave a legacy for your children and your family. You got to know your worth.
All right, for today's teachable moment, so I've done this one multiple times, but I keep doing it because it's important and so many people struggle with it. And it's with the word authenticity. So you tell people to be your authentic self, and then people really don't know what that means. And it means just exactly what it sounds. Be who you are when no one else is around. Stop worrying about what other people think of you. And just be yourself. Because what happens is you're going to end up shrinking who you really are to appease other people. And newsflash, those other people really don't care as much as you think they do. So when you step into your power and you are yourself, you're going to attract the right people into your life and into your inner circle. And then you're going to see your whole outlook on the world is going to completely change. Because trust me, when I first got into this whole entrepreneur game, you start talking to other people who are new in the game as well. So you have a bunch of new people really not learning from each other at all. It was once I went to my first mastermind group and I was surrounded by millionaires and people that just thought completely different and completely shattered my mold to what was normal. Now, full transparency, I am no millionaire yet. But just having that mindset shift is absolutely everything. But it started by me being myself and stopping being who my parents wanted me to be, although they never wanted anything bad for me, but you know what they wanted me to be or what your friends want you to be, what your siblings want you to be. It's like, damn it, this is my life. I want to be how I want to be. And once you step into that, you're going to see everything is going to change for you. So that is today's teachable moment. Now, today we're going to talk about social awareness. Now, that can mean a whole wide variety of things. So I'm not going to put my spin on it because I have a guest in here that's going to do that for us. So let's welcome Natasha N.L. Blandford to the show. Wrong mouth. See, I knew that was going to happen. There we go. Welcome to the show. How's it going?
Good, how are you?
Good. Yeah, so like as I started telling you, I'm using a different computer, but I'm on the same desk with my old computer. So it's like I'm just instinctively I'm reaching for my regular mouse, for my regular keyboard, and not this stuff up here. So that probably will happen a couple more times throughout the show. So if it does, I apologize.
It happens. I do the same thing because I use the same mouse and keyboard for my work computer, and then I forget to plug them into my personal one. And
exactly. So where are you joining us from?
Calgary, Alberta, Canada.
Really? It's a 3 guests in a row from Canada.
Awesome. Woo! Go Canada, go.
Yeah, 3 in a row. Yesterday's guest, Friday's guest, and you. Awesome.
Awesome.
All right. Are you originally from there?
I grew up in Toronto. And then, oh gosh, probably like 16 years ago, my dad's job moved out here and my sister and I joined him and I've been here ever since. It's beautiful. Nice. Love it. Love it out here.
All right. What do you love about it?
It's smaller. So Toronto's huge and way too many people for me. And then it's the mountains. I can see the mountains out my window. So that's always nice.
Sold me on the mountains. I love the mountains. Yeah. Yes. All right. So let's dive in. Let's get to know you a little bit better. So how would your best friend, actually, Betty, how would your sister describe you?
Oh, God.
Curveball.
I was going to say, you did not really know. My sister. She would describe me as a mother to her, actually. Oh. So my parents separated when we were really young, and I was the one who stepped up in addition to my father, but I pretty much took care of my sister from the age of 10 on, like when I was 10 and up. And I always watch out for her. And I actually dedicated my first book to her and would take any road to find her or protect her. So very motherly.
Awesome. All right. So now I'll ask you the other one too, because you were prepared for it. So how would your best friend describe you?
Well, she would also use loving, I think, but another word would be perseverance. So I have pushed through quite a bit. My husband and I had some infertility issues years ago, and although we don't have children, part of the journey was getting to the point to accept that maybe that wasn't what we were meant to do, and persevering through that struggle. And then trying to become a writer while having a full-time job is a lot of work. So I persevere through that every day. So I think that would be a big word in my life.
All right. So let's talk about that childhood. All right. So your parents separated when you guys were young. You know, you kind of had to step up and fill that maternal role. What was that like?
Oh gosh. You did not tell me I was going to therapy today.
Hey, this is about backstory.
I know. Getting to know your authentic self.
Yes.
It was, I feel like, a little natural, but a little weird too, because now I feel like I didn't have a childhood, but okay. I don't know. It's, wow, this is, how did being a mother at the age of 10 feel?
I told you this wasn't going to be your typical interview.
Oh my gosh. But I like it. This is good. I love it. Yeah, it was hard, but I wouldn't change anything because I feel like I've learned a lot, although I've also learned to hide my emotions and thus not be authentic with some people. So
and I ask these kinds of questions to get stuff like that. So why were you hiding your emotions?
Because I needed to be the strong one for my sister.
There we go.
Right? And show her that we can do this. We'll be fine. Everything will be good. And yeah, so I did that.
But what were your true feelings during that period?
Oh, I was devastated and confused and felt betrayed and stuff like that. But that was 30 some odd years ago.
And did that affect you in school or like in your social circles?
Yeah. Because I don't share my feelings. I'm always, so I don't know if you've heard of the Enneagram, but on that, it's like a personality test kind of thing, but more faith-based. And so I'm a 2, which is someone who always puts other people first and has a hard time setting boundaries.
Okay.
And has a really hard time identifying my own needs. However, COVID helped me a lot with that because I had to start saying no I can't see you because it's not safe. Yeah. And I had to look and be like, you know what? I need rest. This is what I need today. Not fill my schedule with everyone else's things and stuff like that. So,
okay. See, so I structured the questions the way that I do, because as you know, I just met you 10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Right. So like, I don't pre-screen the guests on purpose. It's like, I do a little, I look into your bio a little bit just to know like what your background is, you know, what your business yeah. is, who you work with. But then I pick your brain to see how you got there. You know, so I don't want you to think I'm just asking random questions. So like, as we get into the heart of the conversation, you're going to see where all this stuff ties in, because I already have a solid paragraph worth of notes over here. Right.
Awesome.
So now you said that you know, you're putting everyone else's needs ahead of your own. How long did you do that?
Until about 2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. That's why the one blessing for COVID is that I was forced to set some boundaries in my life. And that's when I really started writing. Mm. Not full-time, because I do have a full-time job. But yeah, I really had to reevaluate how I was living my life, and for the good, for my own mental health at any rate. So.
And how do you feel that set you back?
Like the putting other people first, or
yes,
me? Oh, okay. It took me 30 some odd years to actually get the courage to write fiction and stuff like that. Like, I've always wanted to write. I have books of ideas, like notebooks of ideas everywhere, but I never had the confidence to do it because I never believed in myself, because I was always focusing on other people.
And why fiction?
Ooh. I think I tried to write a memoir once, and it was just, I'd have to address those feelings that I don't want to share with anyone. So, no.
I figured that's where it was going.
But I also find I can, as I say, vomit words on a page with fiction and just insert myself in different aspects of the characters and be like, here you go. Here's me kind of on a page.
So you said that you felt like you kind of didn't have a childhood, you know, because you were kind of thrust into this more adult-ish role when your parents split. So do you feel that maybe you gravitated towards fiction to kind of create what you may have wanted?
I think in reading, like, I love Anne of Green Gables, and oh my gosh, if I could be Anne of Green Gables, that would have been the best thing in my life when I was little. And even now, I still reread it over and over again. But okay. The fictional worlds I create, I don't want to be a part of. they're very dark.
Gotcha. And why'd you pick that style?
I love thriller movies and TV and books and stuff like that, and the guessing. And I think part of it's also my job. So I investigate fraud for a bank. So I'm always trying to follow the money and put the puzzle together and figure out how bad guys think or bad people think, and like the motivation behind all of that. And I'm like, ooh, although I haven't written like a fraud or bank heist story.
Okay. And how did you get into that field?
By chance. I worked for the same bank. I think I'm on 16 years now. Okay. And, I trained somebody who moved to the team that does it. And she's like, you need to apply for this. You'd be really good. And so I've been there for 8 years now, I think, and work with law enforcement and all that kind of stuff to put these bad guys away.
All right. So when she said that to you, what was your initial thought?
Oh, yeah, I don't think so. I submitted my resume like the day after the posting closed, because I didn't know anything about the job. And a lot of people are actually shocked that the department even exists. So no, I call us the super secret spies. Because nobody knows we're around. We're a really small team. And so I was like, I don't have any education for this. I don't know, but I do love solving puzzles. So why not?
Okay. All right, so you didn't have the education for it, but, I mean, I get the why not, but there had to have been a why in there somewhere. Like, what made you go ahead and apply anyway?
I wasn't really happy in the role I was in. Okay. And I had, they kept restructuring frequently. So I'm like, this is, I don't think my job's going to be around for very much longer. So I need to go somewhere. And I trusted her and she knew me. So I was like, ah, let's do it. Let's find happiness somewhere else. But within the same company.
Okay. And yeah. So with the position itself, what appealed about the position, you know, like outside of wanting to get out of your current situation?
The ability to grow. So at first it was just kind of looking at surveillance camera and cameras and doing all that stuff. And then I'd actually do the investigations into the breaches into our code of conduct and potential fraud. We don't have that much fraud.
Yeah.
And just being able to pretty much work on my own. So you get a file and you just do your thing. You don't have to really, you work with a small team, but you own it. So I could do it however I wanted to figure it out. So I like that. Okay. I'm a control freak.
All right. So you get the job now. So do you, like, is it a position that you just transferred into, or did you have to give a notice to one department?
I did have to give notice, but it was only a couple weeks. And then I started right up.
Okay. And what was the learning curve to learn a new job?
It was pretty big because, again, nobody knows this team exists. So nobody, like, you have to really dig into the back end of all our systems.
It's like the Fight Club.
It is, right? Nobody knows. Everything's confidential. Like, you sign your life away. But it was... I'm a quick learner, and once I do it two or three times, I pretty much got it, and the team's been lovely, so they helped me grow, and now I'm a rock star. I'm a rock star. Okay.
So now that you're into it, you're trained, what's the most appealing thing about it?
I like the files that involve law enforcement. Not that I want anyone to actually commit fraud and steal money, but... working with lawyers and the police and stuff like that to get everything together and actually go to court. Although I'm terrified to testify and I haven't had to testify yet, but I might on this one. But we'll, just learning from others is amazing.
Okay. So now, like I said, I think I'm piecing it all together quite well so far, but I got a couple more questions. All right, so from what was lost in your childhood, do you feel that's why you're excelling doing this? Because you're a part of something bigger? You have some control over your department and the stuff that you're looking towards? Like, I don't know if I'm saying it right, but...
No,
but like,
I get what you're saying.
Yeah, because kind of what you were saying earlier, and then just the way you were just talking about it, the way you lit up a little bit, I was like, because is this, like, yours now? Like, I can wrap myself around this without having to play that mother/big sister role?
I've never thought of it that way, but it wouldn't surprise me. Especially because I keep saying, I'm like, I can't wait to go to court and then see if these people get justice. But
It's like, I'm just curious because, like, in every episode that I do, it's like I always poke deep into the backstory, and then I equate it into what people are doing now. And a lot of people say what you just said, like, I never really thought of it that way. But for me, that's the fascinating part. Like, and I actually remember when I pitched you, and this was, God, back in July, I think, right? But I remember seeing the crime fighter by day or something like that. And I was like, I know there's a whole story there. I was like, I want to get into that story just to see what about it moves you, you know?
Yeah.
And so, all right, so you're into that now. When do you start writing?
So I've been collecting story ideas forever, but I started my first book like 5 years ago, but again, no confidence. And I was terrified because I wrote about human trafficking, which is, it's a scary topic. People don't know a lot about it, or they think they know something, but that's a misconception. And I didn't want to offend actual victims of it. And so I put it on the back burner until COVID. And then I had nothing else to do except hang out in my house. And while my husband's playing video games, I could sit in front of the TV or I could write a book. So I finished my book, and now I finished two, and I'm on to three. And
nice.
Yeah.
All right, so for that first one, why did you pick human trafficking?
I get this question a lot, and I really don't have an answer. It appeals to me in that people don't know a lot about it or don't realize how close to home it's actually happening. And so I wanted to shed some light on the fact that it's probably happening in your next door neighbor's house or down the street or down the block. It's not something that happens in another country or in another province or state. It is happening right here, and it is a growing problem that people are only just starting, or it seems like people are only just starting to talk about. So, and with some things that have happened, we're not going down this road, but in the past, yeah. We're not going down that road. I feel like a lot of people don't have voices and need some voices. So I thought I'd write about it.
Okay, so what part of human trafficking? Because like it can be different dimensions.
So in my book, The Perilous Road to Her, so it's about two sisters, and one goes missing, and then the other is a police detective out of Toronto who is trying to find her, and then also gets kidnapped and put into the world of human trafficking. So there's the story of trying to find her sister, but also trying to get her own freedom. So I am pretty, I'm going to say graphic in the first book about the rape and stuff that can happen, but there's only a couple scenes, but it's there, and I didn't want to pretend it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Based on the research I've done. So,
okay.
It's dark, but people have always said it's a page turner. So they're learning things. And part of why I wrote it was maybe somebody who reads my book won't read an autobiography of a survivor.
Yeah.
But this way they get to learn something that maybe they don't even know they're picking up on.
Yeah. So is the takeaway education? Is it prevention? Combination of the two?
Combination of the two, and to enjoy a good story. Like I put some resources at the back. So if people are like, wait, maybe that person living down the street, something's going on there and I want to learn more or stuff like that, or how to report it. Or maybe they didn't even realize they were a victim because it takes so many forms, that they're like, oh my gosh, that happened to me. My boyfriend used to ask me to do all these things before or something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Excuse me. And how successful was the book?
It's mediocre. Nobody knows who I am yet. I'm still like, I put it out in May, and I self-published. So I'm still trying to navigate the marketing and the social media. So I don't have that big of a following yet, but I'm hoping once I get this series wrapped up that I can do more promoting. Like a lot of what I've learned over this last, since May, because I knew nothing about self-publishing. I'm like, I'm just going to put it out. Maybe five people will buy it. And then I'm starting to go to conferences and learn more about what I can do to grow awareness. So I still have to learn, but I made $500 last year, $100 of which I donated to charity, because that is one of my things, is this whole book series, either 10% of my royalties or $100, whichever is greater, goes to a charity to combat human trafficking.
Love it. That's actually a solid twist, because I just jotted down some names of people I can connect you with that can help you. They can help you get that out. Yeah, a couple of people like they specialize in helping authors get their message out, and that's a positive message. So about a very dark industry, I guess we'll call it. So yeah, once we're done here, I'll we'll talk about that once we're off the air, and I'll make those connections for you, help you spread the word. All right, so let's talk about the. What'd you say? Creating social awareness. So are there any other areas that you focus in on with your writings?
I'm exploring talking about PTSD in my next series.
Okay.
So I'm tossing ideas around. I haven't finalized what my next series is going to be about because I'm still wrapping up this one. But I just put feelers out to some of my friends on Facebook, and I'm getting a 2 days ago, and I'm getting a lot of messages saying that they want to talk about their stories. And some people are in the military or on the police force, which, excuse me, is kind of where I might focus. So that I think might be the next one. And then addictions I might touch on as well, because people gravitate potentially towards addictions when dealing with mental health problems. So
trying to numb the pain.
Exactly. So I'm just starting on that journey, but a lot of people are sending me a lot of good resources. So I've got a lot of research.
Yeah. I mean, and PTSD covers a very wide range as well, because I help people. So people who go to like therapists and psychologists and stuff, like I don't work in the medical end, but afterwards, if people want to tell their story and they want to tell it in an inspirational way, I help them take those stories and find the teachable moments in them. Like I just worked with a woman whose first love committed suicide in front of her. Mm-hmm. I worked with a woman who had a stroke at the age of 36. I worked with an older man whose mother passed away 35 years ago, and he still hadn't really processed what happened. So those things, they're huge. You know, they're definitely huge. So like if you're going to do that, I mean, I can be a resource for you there too to help you brainstorm and just talk about the different guy. My sister had a brain aneurysm burst, people losing loved ones. You know, I lost my father 2 years ago. Like there's so many, like I said, PTSD just goes wide, very, very wide. But I think if you target one area, mm-hmm. it's really powerful, you know, to target one area. And again, the area that speaks to your heart, that's where you go. But it's, but, you know, just trying to appeal to everyone in such a wide, you know, like just going back to losing someone, like when my father passed away, we knew it was coming, you know, mm-hmm. so he had stage 4 heart failure. We watched him deteriorate over 11 months, and then we ultimately had to end his care. So we were in one mindset. You know, one of my clients, she got a phone call that her father just suddenly dropped at 62 years old. You know, like that's a completely different level than you have my aunt. I mean, granted, she had cancer, but she passed away in her sleep. You know, her boyfriend mm-hmm. thought she was just sleeping in. And then after a few hours, he's like, Annie, and she was gone. You know, so that's a different level of trauma. So you could talk about losing a loved one, but I just displayed this three different levels of loss. Yeah. You know, so like it. Like that category is endless possibilities.
Mm-hmm. And I think, so because I write thrillers, the characters either, one of the characters either going to be like in law enforcement or investigating crime somehow, or complete opposite end, be like a mobster who needs to deal with his or her issues. Probably a her, because I feel more comfortable writing from the viewpoint of a woman. But
gotcha.
Yeah.
All right, so... like, do you see yourself doing maybe like a series?
Yep. Series for self-published author series are usually better, because then you grip your audience and like, ooh, I'll buy your next one. Ooh, I'll buy your next one. Mm. Instead of standalones. But again, I'm still learning this whole self-publishing thing. So, but I think you can do a lot if in a series.
Yes, especially I agree.
It's with crime or like mobsters or something. Always somebody to battle.
True. What did your sister do for work?
Oh gosh, I don't understand what she does. Something around surety and insurance for construction companies, I think.
Okay.
Numbers. She's a numbers girl.
Gotcha. Okay. Yes.
Yeah, so I'm the art brain, and she's the numbers brain.
Have you guys ever considered working together?
I had mentioned, because she's really into finances and helping people with their finances before COVID. And I was like, well, we could potentially write a book together. And then COVID happened, and she has a family and has a lot that she has to deal with. So gotcha. I was like, okay, maybe we'll put that on the back burner. But.
And I was just curious, because like with me too, I'm a very, very creative, abstract kind of visionary thinker. Mm-hmm. And I don't do so well on the organizational end, but like one of my sisters, she's a speaker too. She wrote a book about her weight loss journey. She's weighed 425 pounds, and I always tell us, like, you know, we should really link up because she's very organized. She's very detailed, but she's very reserved. Whereas mm-hmm. I'm a risk taker. Like, failure doesn't exist in my world. It's like, it can't work if I don't try. Like, that's my mentality. So if I try and it doesn't work, whatever, at least we tried. Right. And so, like, if we could just somehow combine our powers, but like I said, she's reserved.
Yeah.
And so it's tough for her to deal with my willingness to just go. So just curious as to the dynamic between you and your sister.
We love each other. I feel like we might kill each other. If we actually got into business together. But I don't know.
just from being opposite?
I think so. I don't. We are very opposite personalities. I'm the reserved person, although extremely organized and extremely, like, artsy. Yeah. But, and she's the more outgoing one. I'm like, how do you do that? I don't know how you... Okay. I'm just going to stay in my little office behind my little computer.
That's so funny. All right. So how many of these types of shows have you been on? Like, been on podcasts, or have you been on TV at all?
Oh, no TV. I wish. I've tried to pitch TV, but I think I need to work on those skills. I think I've been on 3 podcasts. This might be 4. And then I have another one next month. I did. My first one was a local one here in Calgary, which I love, and I have to reach back out to her, but I hope to meet up with her when it's safe and actually meet her in person. And
yeah. Okay. Well, you're going to have about another 8 at once we're done here. So yes. I'm going to connect you with my podcast peeps. But speaking of when it's safe, how bad are things now in that side of Canada?
Omicron is killing us. So over Christmas, we had 10,000 cases a day in Alberta.
Wow.
So my husband and I had gone to see his mom and like his family up in Edmonton. And we ended up coming back early after seeing grandma because it was just getting too crazy and the risk was too high because he's vulnerable.
Yeah.
Like autoimmune compromised. So
yeah,
we pretty much stay in as much as we can, but we don't have many restrictions here.
Okay.
In that, yes, you have to prove you're vaccinated to go to a restaurant and stuff like that, but you're allowed to be in people's homes and stuff now. So I think that's part of why it's spreading pretty bad. But I don't know. They say we'll top out at 100,000 cases countrywide soon here in January, and then hopefully the peak will go down. Mm-hmm. And then spring, hopefully, will be good.
Until the latest variant pops up.
So, let's just hope.
I know.
That's the thing. Like, when I wrote this book or was starting to get ready, I'm like, maybe I could do an in-person launch at like a pub and it'll be fun and we'll have a big party. Mm. And no.
No.
Just an announcement on Facebook. So it's ready. You can buy it if you want it. Yay.
Yeah, no. Me and my fitness clients, we were talking about it earlier. And I said, you know, when are they just going to realize that nothing's working? Like, everything they have us do, it's still spreading. No matter what it is, it's, you know, they lock the businesses down, it's still spread. Mass mandates still spread. Social distancing still spread. There's vaccines now, it's still spreading. It's mutating and it's spreading. It's, you know what I mean? It's like, it's out of control. It's out of control.
Yeah.
But what can you do?
Do what you can to be safe and respect everyone else's opinion.
Yeah, true. So who's your target audience?
Thriller has such a wide range, but I would say I have it's not a really big following, but the town my sister lives in, which is just outside where I live, all of the like 30 to 40, I'm just guessing based on photos, year old women love it. They love my book. I need to do an event out there when I can because they're loving it. But I think a lot of thriller people are between 30 and like 80, and mostly women. But I've had quite a few men also read my book. So everybody loves a good thriller and a good page turner. And you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe she did that. What? That's a good point. Damn you. And people who like villains, like love to hate or hate to love villains, as I say.
True. You know, a good thriller, in my opinion, you kind of feel for the villain. I know this sounds awful, but like if you think about, say, if you're an MCU person, I know it's a different extreme, but like on Infinity War.
Yeah.
It's like you, even though Thanos was psycho, you still kind of felt his mission. Right. You know what I mean? Like, or even in Cobra Kai with some of the more villainous students, as they get more into the backstory, it's like, oh, you kind of see why they are the way they are. So like it kind of sucks you in, where it's like, okay, I'm supposed to hate her, but I kind of get where she's coming from. You know, like I would never do what she's doing, but I get it.
Exactly. And that's what I hope to strive to do. And William is one of the bad guys in the first two books. And yeah, I've had a lot of feedback that, I love him, but I hate him, but I love him.
Love it. Yeah. What's the name of your first book?
The Perilous Road to Her.
Okay.
And then the second one is The Perilous Road to Freedom.
Hmm.
And then I'm working on The Perilous Road to Him. So there's a theme there.
I see that. All right. So what's the takeaway in the first one? Or what's the theme of the first one?
Oh, gosh. Sisterly love. But I think that's more of a hidden one. Because at the start, she really doesn't like her sister. And she thinks that she, like her... So Olivia's the main character and her sister's Claire. And Claire used to be this big CEO, and then she got to drugs and her life fell apart. And so Olivia's been trying to help her for years and finally realizes maybe I just have to let her hit rock bottom. But then hitting rock bottom means she gets kidnapped. So she's also trying to deal with her own, oh my gosh, did I do this? Was it my fault?
Mm.
And then trying to recognize or trying to obtain her own freedom out of this hell of a life and take down this evil family.
Interesting.
Self-actualization is big throughout all three books, I think.
And what was your motivation to write that story? Like, did it stem from something, or was it something that just popped into your mind and you went with it?
I think it just popped up into my mind because I, like, in my notebook, I have a date of 2008, and I do not remember what happened in 2008. But I wrote it down, and then I went to a fraud conference in Vancouver where... a survivor of human trafficking spoke, and I was like, I do really need to write this story. And again, it still took me years, but I read her book. She had been promised a babysitting job in Canada, and that was not the job she was given.
Ah,
so
okay,
I was like, people need to know about this stuff.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like my daughter would be all over that. She's into the like Law and Order, SVU, and all that stuff, you know. So like that sounds like a story that would definitely be up her alley. All right, so let's talk about the second one, the second book,
Perilous Road to Freedom. So without giving any spoilers, because the first one ends on a cliffhanger.
Okay.
Olivia finds herself once again trapped.
That's tripping me out because my daughter's name is Olivia.
Oh, is it?
Go ahead.
Completely random. But so now, rather than trying to find her sister, she's once again trying to find her freedom, but dealing with the demons from the first book and a surprise that happens at the end of the first book that I can't give away.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's another battle for her freedom while also dealing with her emotions toward her captor.
Okay.
So I threw in the twist of there's maybe a relationship there that she's trying to like navigate why she would ever pursue that. And
okay. Yeah. Sounds like it would make a good movie.
That's not my friends. Like, man, I want this to come out on Netflix. I was like, well, if you know anybody, you can make that happen.
Yeah, because me personally, I'm not a big reader because my mind drifts. Like, I just can't zero in on stories, but like movies, short videos. Case in point, I'm working on writing a book, ironically, but I've stopped. I'm 6 chapters in, and I just stopped. And I don't know. Like, I can do videos all day long with no preparation. And people are like, well, just speak it and then transcribe it. And so I tried that. I mean, granted, I know I can outsource and have somebody else do it, but the transcription isn't always perfect. And then, so I did just one chapter, and it took me like almost 3 hours to fix the transcription because like words were doubled or words were left off or I changed the word. So I was like, you know what? Yeah. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to just go back to typing it. But I went away for 4 days because I know most people say I'm busy, but like, I really am. I'm a busy dude. And so I went away for 4 days to get the process started. And I figured, you know, when I get back in between, you know, stuff, I'll jot down some and jot that. But like I said, my mind just doesn't work like that. When I get on a roll, I need to just go, which is why I went away. God, I wrote for probably 6 hours a day for the 4 days I was away. But like, I can't just go and then just hit the pause button and go teach a fitness class and then come back, unpause, and keep, like, my mind doesn't do that. So
mine either.
I've kind of been stuck on chapter 6.
Yeah, I usually Sundays are my writing days because, of course, I work Monday to Friday. Mm-hmm. And then Saturday is usually relaxing. And then Sunday I hit it hard and then I work. And then, or I go away. Every time I edit, or not every time, when I print it all out, I think that's on like my 3rd or 4th draft. I usually print it out, either rent an Airbnb or go to my father-in-law's trailer. And then I spend 4 days just going at it because I too need to be in there and not distracted by my world.
so true. And it's so easy, especially when you wear a bunch of hats. Because it's like I'm a single father, I'm a gym owner, I'm a podcast host, I'm a speaker, I guest on other podcasts, writing the book, I'm a track and field official, I'm a coach. It's, you know what I mean? It's like just doing all these different things, like I was saying earlier. And it's not a woe is me kind of thing. It's like I'd rather have that than like a drug habit, you know what I mean? So it's like I'd rather, you know, be helping athletes, be helping people. I do women's empowerment groups, I do mental performance training with athletes. Like I'd rather just have my hand in helping as many people in the world as I can, you know, rather than just other things. There's much worse things I could be doing with my time. But it's like I want to get the book written because even though I'm not a big reader, there are people that are. Yeah. You know, so I figured the things that I can put down from my world and my experiences that could help other people. And of course, the name of the book is Shut Up and Grind, you know, and it's like it can be tailored to really any industry. I can do Shut Up and Grind for coaches. I can do Shut Up and Grind for athletes, Shut Up and Grind for teachers, for counselors. Like the list goes on and on. It's like pick an industry, right? And I can write a blueprint for whatever that industry is. And so, but it's just a matter of finding time to get it done, you know, making time to get it done. Cause we all have the same hours. So it's just a matter of what you do with it.
Yeah. You're just your priority that given day. Like I know a lot of writers will get up early and I tried to do this before I got this big file and write for an hour and then go to work, or they'll like stand in line at the grocery store while they're waiting for their groceries to be rung in and they're writing. I'm like, I can't do that.
Yeah, that doesn't work for me either. It's like when I have my thought, it needs to go down right then and there.
Exactly.
You know. All right, so let's talk about book 3.
Yes. The currently in process. I was working on it before I logged in. I started it in December. I'm done my first draft and we'll see. One of the things is you got to keep the expectations of your audience kind of the same. So if I release books every 6 months, I kind of got to release books. I don't have to, but the goal would be to do it every 6 months. So if I put another one out every month, there's no way I can keep up that momentum. So I'm just trying to work through that. So maybe by May I'll have the series wrapped up. We'll see. But I'm excited. This one takes place years in the future. Olivia thinks her past is behind her, and it's not.
Just when you thought Jason was dead.
Right?
You hear that? That's good. So this one is going to wrap up the other two?
Yes. Yeah, it's going to wrap it up. But the main theme is preconceptions. So, again, I don't want to give away spoilers, but she's got to wrap her head around why she sees somebody the way she does and actually see them for who they are.
Okay.
So that one doesn't touch on human trafficking too much, other than kind of referencing her past, but it just wraps up her story.
Okay. Like it. All right. So what's next from there?
Well, that's what I have to decide. I think I'm going to put a poll out and be like, do we want the crime series that might involve the PTSD and the like maybe an AI? I don't know. Who knows? So many ideas. I have another idea where people just go into a town and never come out. I don't want to give too much away, but why don't they ever leave? Or why do they go there in the first place? And then things happen. And then my mobster story. So I don't know. My sister, I went out for coffee with my sister yesterday and I was pitching her my ideas. She's like, I like the mobster one. Go with the mobster one. That sounds good. The mobster, you don't hear about those men very often. So.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Hey, whatever, you know, fills your passion, go with it.
Exactly.
So, you know, what does your husband do?
He teaches engineering. So he wasn't in the engineering business, but then now he teaches at SAIT, a technical school here in Calgary. So he's imparting his wisdom on the minds of the younger people.
What branch of engineering?
Geotechnical.
Oh.
Dirt. That's all I know.
Dirt.
Like, I have no idea what my sister does. I don't understand what he does either.
Okay. Yeah, like I was saying earlier about people trying to live up to what their parents wanted them to do, like initially, and to his credit, he definitely wasn't wrong. Like, my dad wanted me to go into computer engineering. So this was in 1992 when I graduated. And I was like, I'm kind of not feeling that. He's like, Robert, he's like, I'm telling you, he's like, everything is going to end up going to computers. But now he had an engineering degree, you know, so like that industry is near and dear to him. Like he loves to build. He loves to know how things work. Yeah. I could care less. Like when I turn the key, I have a push button now. So like when I push the button for my car to start, I just need it to start. I don't need to know the hows and the whys. You know, like I'm not that person. I just need it to work. But he was like, you know, I'm telling you, you get into this now. It's like this industry is going to boom. And again, to his credit, he definitely wasn't wrong. You know, we all have one of these now. Our cars are computerized. Like everything is computerized now, but it didn't do anything for me. It's like, I belong entertaining people, motivating people, inspiring people, pushing people to be better, helping people push out of their comfort zone. Like that's where I belong. You know, like I don't belong in an office trying to figure out how shit works. Like that just doesn't do it for me. You know. So for you, going down this road, like what does that do for you personally as you're writing these stories?
Oh, it makes me so happy. I had 2 weeks off at Christmas. And at the end, like, I love my job. I do love my job. But I'm like, man, can I just do this and still make my salary? Because that would be lovely. But one day we'll get there. I just have to build up my backlog and build up my audience. And I'll get there. But I love creating art. I sing. I dance. I used to paint. I haven't painted in a long time. But like, I'm very... very artistic, so being engrossed in words, and I'm never without a book. Even when I'm watching TV, I'm generally reading a book. I multitask. Like words are my life.
Love it. So, fun fact: art was the one class in school that I failed.
Math was the one class in school that I failed.
It's like I really think the teacher just gave me a 65 because we need it to I think this was in sixth grade, so we needed it to go to seventh grade. And I remember we were doing like a still life, you know, something like this. And she's okay, you gotta draw it. And I'm like, I can't draw that. And she's like, you're not even trying. I'm like, I'm telling you. What you expect and what you're gonna get are opposite sides of the spectrum. It's like, that's just not how. Even now, to this day, my ex and I, this was years ago. I found. No.
Oh, I can hear you, but I can't.
Can you hear me? Am I back?
I can hear you, but your screen's broken. There you are. Okay.
Oops. I heard you chuckle.
Okay.
Oh, there we are. Okay. Yeah, that was on my end. The my Wi-Fi box flashed for a second there. All right. No, what the hell was I saying?
Your ex and you were something years ago.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, so I finally gave in, and she dragged me to a paint and vino night. At a local bar, because I was telling her, I was like, you know, art is not my thing, you know, but she really wanted to go, so I was like, all right, I'll go. And I actually still have the painting. It's upstairs by the front door, but like it was cool how they had you do it. They had like these little cutout things and like trace this and shade this and do that. And when I first started, I was like, this looks like trash. You know, but just as it was unfolding, but then once I was done, I was like, that's all right.
Right?
But I was like, but I have no desire to do another one. I was like, so I'm proud of this one, you know, but with me, I'm an athlete. So going back to what I said earlier in my teachable moment about being your authentic self, it's about knowing who you are at your core. Mm-hmm. And embracing those things that make you who you are, you know. So with you being creative and having that love of, you know, highlighting social issues through your stories, I think it's amazing. And as I said, and when you talk about it, you can see it. It's like, you know, you glow. So you can tell that really does touch your soul, you know. So if there's someone out there that wants to do what you're doing, but for whatever reason, they're hesitant. So is there any time where you had that imposter syndrome that you could give them some words of wisdom?
I just had it on Wednesday. I'm still trying to navigate social media and I don't know what I'm doing. And but writing wise, I definitely had it before this book because I'd never written a book before. But I would say write the book for you, not for anyone else, because one, you don't know if anyone's going to read it and it's your story, not anyone else's story. Because as soon as you'd be like, oh, what's my husband going to think? Or what's my mother going to think when I'm writing these sex scenes or whatever? Like, don't worry about what anyone else thinks. Do it for you. And also don't do it for the money, because there really isn't any. Until you have like 100 books out there. But if you're, I can't remember if it was a podcast or a video I was watching. But if you're doing it for the money, then your motivations really aren't that, or I don't believe that authentic. They're just, everyone wants that Netflix deal, or I'm going to make $1 million and write the best-selling book. But not everyone's Stephen King and has the luck of just getting $400,000 for their first book.
Exactly.
And it takes years. If you're going to go the traditional route, it does take years to get an agent. But if you're not worried about traditional and you just want to, hey, I'm going to write a book, you can post it on Amazon and self-publish and you can follow that dream.
It's true. I just want to double down on what you said about chasing money. Because again, for people that listen to this on the regular, I say that constantly. It's like, if you chase money, it's like you might find it, but money can be lost just as easily. Like, I believe it was Chris Rock who said, even if you're rich, he's like, you can lose rich with a bad weekend and a drug habit. Yeah. You know, which is so true. But if you're doing something that fuels your soul, like when people come into my gym, I don't just take people in. You know, and I know I lose a lot of money with that, but I want the right people. I want the people who are ready, not people that I have to text every morning. All right, are you ready to get up? Are you ready to come train? I'm not that dude. You know, it's like you have to be disciplined enough to get yourself to the door. It's like once you're in the door, I will pour into you with everything that you need to stay on track. But if you don't have at least enough discipline to show up, then I'm not your guy. You know, because like I want to work with those people that can get the best of me. You know, going back to what I was saying about doing what fills your soul, you know, fulfills your soul. And when you do that, the right people come and they're usually connected to other people who think similarly, you know. And so then those people come and then what comes with them? Money comes with them. You know, so like I don't go trade. All right, if I just bring in 30 people this month, I'll make X amount of dollars. You know, it's like I'd rather get in 5 of the right people. And then do you have someone else you could bring in? You know, do you have someone else you can bring in? Then at the end of the month, we still get our 30 people, but I have 30 of the right people and not just the first 30 people that responds to the ad. You know, and getting people to understand that concept. Is like that's how during COVID, when so many gyms shut down, like we were able to stay open because I had that firm base, I had that firm commitment from my peeps. And I said, all right, listen, we're gonna have to train virtually, but we're still training. It's like you're still getting the best of me. Just instead of being within the gym, I'm in your living room, I'm in your garage gym, I'm in your spare bedroom, like wherever you are. That's where you're getting me, and you're still going to get the same level that you got within the gym. So I never stopped charging. Whereas so many people, you know, like one gym decided to do free classes, so everybody else followed suit. And I'm like, how are you going to maintain, you know, the gym and maintain your own livelihood by doing that? It's like, you can't do that. So I didn't think about the money aspect. I thought about the, you guys, we're going to switch to Zoom to keep you guys on track.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what everyone bought into. Like, if not, what's going to happen? You're going to completely derail yourself. And then this is all for nothing. I said, so we're just going to shift the location, you know, like, and I'll be here for you guys the same hours. Like some people were just doing like 2 classes a day. The full schedule I had in person, I did it on virtual. To make sure I was still there for everyone at the times that they were accustomed to. Because, like, I could have very easily taken the easy way out. Because on Zoom, you can have 100 people on Zoom. And I could have said, all right, we're just going to do one class at 9 a.m. and had everybody come to the one class. You know, but it wasn't about my convenience. So it was about being there for them. So we were able, you know, to maintain everything throughout that whole pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Enough. Yeah, and I think the other thing I'd add is maybe like just keep writing. Like I wrote almost a whole book that is never going to be published because it's a tie-in from a murder mystery to a love story. It's got like everything that doesn't make sense to go together, and it's a Western. Like what? I don't know what I came up with. But it just write, and you don't have to put it out there. And maybe the next one will. Spark like that story could spark something else, and you just keep going at it. If you love it, then you'll find time, and if you love it, the words will come for sure.
Love it, yeah. If you love it, you'll definitely make time.
Yeah,
you'll make time. That's what it boils down to. Again, I tell my fitness clients that all the time. Like, oh, I'm busy. I'm like, so are you in the rest of the world? Oh, you know, well, it's like I have kids, and the kids have after school stuff. It's like, yeah, so do you and everyone else that has kids. It's like we all go through it, you know. So it's like it's just a matter of you can make time, or you can make excuses. That's what it boils down to.
Mm-hmm. You know? If you're sitting at the hockey rink, type your book out on your phone.
Yes.
While exactly. You're waiting for your kid to practice.
Exactly. Like one of my daughters plays softball, and during the tournaments, you know, tournaments can last the entire weekend, you know, start Friday night, all day Saturday, all day Sunday. I'm like the only parent, or I'll say one of the few parents, I walk the entire game. So it's like walk around the field. The entire game. So depending on the tournament, I can get anywhere from 10 to 20 to 25,000 steps during a game. without missing a beat of the game. You know, sometimes I take coaching calls during a game because if someone wants to do it, I say, okay. Because especially with softball, it's not constant action. You know, unless your kid's the pitcher. It's like, but my daughter, she plays third base and she catches. You know, so while I'm walking around, even if I'm on a call, I can still see everything. And I'll even tell the person, hold on one second, my kid's up. You know, watch the kid and then go right back to the call. So it's like you can make things happen even if you have things like that. So you say, oh, my kid has a tournament. I say, yeah, but you're talking like 5 to 6 hours a day.
Yeah.
All weekend. So you're trying to tell me there's 10 hours that you're just going to sit on your butt and 9 times out of 10 scrolling Instagram instead of doing something productive.
That would drive me crazy. Exactly. I get 3 books read by the end of that tournament.
Exactly. All right. So give us some closing words, then we'll break down this part. Then remember, I have to have some connections for you when we're done.
Some closing. I don't know what to say.
Come on. This is your moment.
This is my moment. Oh,
it's
my
time
goodness.
To shine.
I was not prepared to shine today. Although I do have a nice little halo thing happening with the sun coming in my room.
Yeah, you do.
I would just say, like, well, one, thank you for having me on and listening to my story. But I would just encourage people, you know, just whatever is nagging in the back of your mind saying, maybe I should try that, try it. And like you said, if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But maybe you'll find something you're really passionate about and it could change your life.
Love it. And to just keep in mind that it may not look the way you think it's supposed to look.
Yes, definitely.
Like that's the huge one. Like I had a guest on, you know, she wanted to write, I don't remember the exact, this was like 100 episodes ago. It was like she wanted to write on a certain topic and she was trying to do it. It wasn't working. And now she's a successful children's author.
See?
Know what I mean? And it's like that wasn't her initial target. But it's like the universe kind of pushed her in that direction. You know, it's like you have a love for children. You have a passion for this. You have a love of writing. Boom, here it is. You know, so just because you had one idea, that doesn't mean that it may not come to fruition looking a little different. Mm-hmm. So like that's not a failure, because too many times us as humans, it's like we're so fragile at times. We hit a little bit of adversity. Like, oh, it's not meant to be. It's like no, it means keep going. It just might look different, you know. So I'll just add that on to your final words, is to just get it started, and then just like you said earlier, just persevere, you know. Mm-hmm. Just persevere. Just keep going till you win. You know, it's like there's no quitting. You keep going till you win. Plain and simple.
Exactly.
All right. Well, thank you, Natasha. This was great. Solid conversation. And like I said, I have connections for you once we go off air, so don't sign off yet. And I'm sure I'll see you again in the future. We'll catch up with you, see how things are going, and maybe I'll get you on one of my panels as well.
Sweet.
All right. Awesome. Well, take care. You have a good day.
Thanks. You too.
All right. Bye. All right. So that was Natasha. We're talking about writing, following your passion, doing what fuels your soul. So you guys know that's what this show is all about. And again, if you're brand new, said there's 202 other episodes to check out. I talk with people from all walks of life, all races, all religions, all everything. Whatever social stigma is out there, I talk to them too. And we've gotten their backstories. And it's all about inspiring you to take action. At one point, I was inspired from someone else's story to take action. And now we're putting that energy back out into the world. So that's all I have for you. I will be back again tomorrow at 11 a.m. Eastern. Take care.
You've been listening to Shut Up and Grind. We hope you've gotten some useful and practical information from this show. Robert has over 20 years' experience pouring his knowledge and expertise at many events in the service and fitness industry, as well as secondary schools and universities. He has a true passion for helping others break through the barriers that are holding them back. To book Robert B. Foster to speak or to reach out, go to robertbfoster.com. Till next time, shut up and